ODDO BHF. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Yes. Hello. Good morning, Philippe, and thanks for taking my question. I will start with a question on OV and the working cap improvement we've seen. Part of that was related to the inventories, but I guess there was also the use of trade receivable factoring. So I was just wondering what's the upside potential for more leeway in terms of trade receivables, and is it fair to assume that you've reached the internal limit that you've set for PCD and that the leeway would only come from Opel? That's the first question. Maybe we can start with this one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good morning, George. Thanks for the questions. So in 2018, in the OV working capital improvement, a bit more than 50% was due to inventories, and we had an effect of 660 million euros in factoring. In PCD, we considered that the working capital has now come to a point where it's rather optimized, so I don't see upside. I think we can keep it with an activity that is remaining more or less stable. It should remain at the same level. Of course, if you've got a huge crisis in Europe and you've got a huge decrease in your volumes, you will lose some payable. But except for that, then the basic scenario is a stability in working capital in PCD.
Right. Okay, that's clear. When you look at the OV target, I think throughout the plan was a 1.2 billion gain on working capital. I would say that you've already overachieved that. So should we assume that actually by the end of the plan, the total gain on working capital will be, presumably maybe double the initial amount?
Well, maybe I can help you a little bit on this one. If you take the volumes coming from Korea, what you can assume that is that the logistics has a negative impact about 50 or 60 days. So if you consider the volumes coming from Korea and apply, and delete this 50 or 60 days impact on inventories in the future, that should give us the possibility of improvement of the inventories in OV. So there remains some upside, but it's not something huge either.
All right. Okay. A second point, still on OV. During the plan, you mentioned what you called implementation costs of 1.6 billion, which was mainly, let's say, restructuring charges. To date, it's slightly less than 1 billion. If I add up 17 and 19, that's more than 60% of that amount. Should we expect the 1.6 billion to remain valid, or could it, eventually be much higher than that amount?
Well, we should consider the amount of restructuring and the amount of recurring operating income that we're going to generate. So my expectation is at the end, the 1.6 to be, we'll do probably more than 1.6, but we'll also do more working capital, as mentioned before. And we remain with this will to compensate one with the other. And, of course, we are no more talking about 2% of operating margin. So there remains consistency between the different parameters. So, but the answer formally is, yeah, more restructuring, but more working capital benefit and more profit.
Okay, fair enough. Two last points, if I may. Looking at the margin, the 4.5% over the remainder of the plan, I think the question that was the very last question during the analyst meeting on the impact of electrification. So my question is, have you probably factored in some margin dilution related to the electrification drive. So could you share with us your thoughts on what the impact might be, or what is, let's say, factored in this, midterm plan target?
Okay. So, Okay, thanks for the question. So maybe the answer has to be a bit extended to explain what we do. I've shared that with already in the past, but maybe it's important to make it clear again. Our hypothesis for electrification and CO2 target is to work with 7% of LEV in 2020 and a hypothesis of 10% diesel market share maximum in the 10% diesel share on the market, which are two constraints which makes our life difficult in terms of CO2 and leads to a high optimization of ICE. So when we say that, in the 7% of LEV, it will be shared between BEV and PHEV. We consider that on PHEV, the risk on margins is not that high because seen from a customer, the PHEV gives, I would say, all the advantages of an ICE and of a BEV. It's a bit the best of both worlds. You can enter the zero emission zone without any issue. You don't have a problem of autonomy. And on top of that, you've got extra power in terms of with the engine that is the ICE plus the electrical one. So we think that from a customer perspective, this has added value, and that we should be able to get a good level of pass-through of the cost in the prices. On top of that, we are talking about segments that are not as price-sensitive as the low segments. After that, on the BEV side, well, it's a bit incognita terra. It's a bit difficult to say. If you just reason on a pure rational point of view, you can say, well, normally we should be able to convince the customer that he's paying more with the cost. He's paying more to buy the car, but after that he's got savings when he uses a car, especially because the cost of electricity is much lower than the cost of gasoline or diesel. So from a rational point of view, you can consider that you can sell that to the customer, but the big question I think for everybody in 2020 is what will be the behavior of the actors that are struggling to reach the CO2 targets. So the main risk for the industry, and it's not for PSA, but it's for everybody, but is to have some actors dumping the BEV in the market at a lower price than rational in order to avoid fines. And that's something that we take into account in our plans. And, of course, we want to reduce the risk by having only 7% LEV and half of it or less than half of it in BEV. Is it clear enough?
Yes, but in hard number. Let's say when I look at what your peers are saying or have said so far, basically they all agree that, you know, it's going to be margin dilutive, and basically if you do nothing, you know, margin will come under pressure. You know, in the premium, I mean, if I just take Daimler, for instance, it could be a, you know, 2 percentage point impact on the margin should they not do anything. So they have, let's say, plans to address this and try and compensate that. But, of course, they are pretty more aggressive than you are in terms of the, you know, their target for electrification share. I mean, they're talking 15-25%. You're talking 7%. So is that enough to make the difference and ensure that it will be, I wouldn't say margin neutral, but at least less dilutive at PSA than at your peers?
Well, the question is, I think as long as the TCO of the BEV is not equal to the ICU, which will be the case until 2023, 2024 probably, it will impact profitability. But after that, if you sell only a few percent of LEV, well, and if you've got 93% of your cars with a margin that is not decreasing and 7% with a margin that is lower, well, the impact exists, but it's not too dilutive. But, okay, so that's our thinking at that stage. After that, on the sales side, we push everybody to get as fast as we can on the same level of profitability, but it remains a big question mark for the industry. I cannot say more on that stage.
Just one final question on the FinCos. Very, very nice improvement in profitability last year. What would drive the earnings, going forward? I know that there's probably a catch-up effect for, let's say, OV Finance versus, the JVs with Santander there. But apart from that, what would be the levers for further improvement?
Well, on the OV side, so the further improvement is clearly a penetration rate that has to reach the level of PCD, because as you've seen in the slide, there is a strong difference between the 22.1% of the penetration rate for OVF compared to 31.1% for PCD. So that's the main lever. On the PCD side, there is still some work to do on the penetration rate, but it will not be a drastic change compared to what we've got today, especially as we focus on the profitable channels in the bank, which is not the policy for everybody, but we are not interested to increase the penetration rate going to other to some bad channels. After that, on the cost of risk, I think it's fair to say that the level that we've reached is extremely low. Well, it's not specific to PSA. I have mentioned that we had some, I've mentioned already during the presentation of the preview that the 0.13 was 0.20 without one-offs. So on that side, I don't expect on cost of risk that we've got upside. On the contrary, I think the cost of risk of the industry should increase a little bit.
Okay, well, thanks very much for taking all these questions. Thanks very much, and have a good day.
Thanks, George.
The final question in the queue comes from the line of Philippe Houchard from Jefferies. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. My question is going back on restructuring costs. So we now have 1.3 billion of restructuring provision on the balance sheet. I'm assuming that the cash cost of that happens over the next two and a half years. My question is more general. Is if I look at the history of restructuring in autos, is typically is the gap between what you invest for and what you eventually realize. But in the case of PSA, you have become very, very capital efficient over the past few years. So arguably the risk of not getting a return on your investment is lower at PSA than in what we've seen historically and against many of your peers. So my point there is, when do we run out of restructuring opportunities? And when assuming markets are stable, et cetera. But it seems to me that we pretty soon, in the next 2 years, we have some risk at OV, but we're going to get to a point where there's nothing left to optimize and restructure at PSA. Or am I being too optimistic?
Well, thanks, Philippe, for your question. I think there are two questions to address with restructuring. The first one is the question of competitiveness and of the plans. And what we can see is that PCD is not the best player in terms of efficiency of the manufacturing plants. We've got one competitor in particular that is better than we are. So there is still work to be done. Competitiveness also comes from the fact that we try to have a switch from high-cost countries to average or low-cost countries, which means that it makes sense to decrease the capacity in the high-cost country and to increase it in low-cost country. That requires some effort in terms of restructuring, but it pays off. That's the first part of the answer. The second part of the answer, if we look at the group, is we have a high ratio utilization of the plants in PCD, which is around 112% in 18, and for OV we were at 80%. And in fact, our goal when we are in markets that are significant, that are quite high, I would say, on a historical basis, we think that we should always work with three or four shifts, which means a high utilization rate. So if you consider that we are 112 on one side and 81 on the other one, there is still work to be done to increase the utilization rate. So that requires some restructuring, but the benefit of it is manufacturing costs that decrease afterwards, and in case of a downturn, you have the possibility to decrease the number of shifts. from 4 to 3 or from 3 to 2, and to remain in a setup that is very efficient from an economical point of view. That's our thinking today.
That makes sense, yeah. And would you share with us who is your benchmark on plant productivity?
You know, it's a company that has working in a kind of alliance.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
We've had another question come through from the line of Dominic O'Brien from Exam. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Hey, guys. Sorry, just a couple of follow-ups from me. The first one is on Opal labor savings. Can you give us an update on how many employees left the company in 2018 on the voluntary redundancy scheme? Have most of the 3,700 workers in Germany now left? And is the cash cost restructuring of that going to be felt in 2019, or did we already feel it in 2018? If we could do that one first, and I'll get on to the others afterwards. Thanks.
Okay. Basically, we're not obsessed with the number of people. We're obsessed with wages divided per revenue ratio. And I think you've seen where we are in the slide, where we want to go for the company as a whole. And I'm not going to be obsessed by a number in OV or PCD. We want to manage that globally. And I think the best way to make projections for the future is to take the wage and revenue ratio, and based on the hypothesis of revenue, to make the necessary deductions.
Okay, but can you give us any idea on how much of that was achieved basically in the second half, or at least at Q4 18? Because I was under the impression most of the workers were going to be at least in the process of leaving in the second half of 18.
Well, that remains so. Well, you can see that the OV was at 12.6% in 18 of wages to revenue ratio. At group level, we want to reach the 10%, so there remains some significant work to be done.
Okay. And then in terms of just inventory and working capital, I noticed that the wholesaling impact of Opal was really strong in Q4, particularly in December, even though the European markets weren't particularly strong. So was that sort of working capital management into the year end, and should we expect it to reverse, or am I missing something there in the sales channel?
Well, in fact, you noticed that the water was quite high compared to the previous year, but in fact, it's a previous year that was extremely low the previous year, because the starting point of OV when we arrived was a situation of inventories that were really too high in the 1st of August, and we had to manage a reduction in production and we'll say. So it's a question of basis of reference.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And then final one, you're saying you won't split out the bridge for PCD and Opal separately. Is that going to be same for all the financial metrics? So will we still get Opal free cash flow, Opal revenue, and Opal EBIT? Or is that all going to be one number?
It's going to be one number. You know, if you take the example of free cash flow, I don't know how I'm able to produce really a free cash flow in the future when you've got the same components for the same platforms of Peugeot, Citroën, Opel cars in the same warehouses and with plants that are not going to be PCD or OV, but are going to be PSA. We're going to have plants that produce, for example, Poissy is going to produce Opel car and PCD cars. In OV, we started production of EB engines in Eastern Europe for PCD and OV. So it doesn't make sense anymore to talk about PC and OV. We are talking about PSA, exactly as we had merged Peugeot and Citroën. And nobody is asking me today free cash flow or Peugeot and free cash flow and Citroën. And there will be no more sense about it. So, and I think it's important to understand that it corresponds to what we want to do with the company.
Got you. Makes sense. Thank you.
We currently have four more questions in the queue, the next of which comes from the line of Pierre from MainFirst. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my question. Pierre Camilleri, MainFirst. I got two questions, if I may. First one is a bit technical. Sorry for that. I often have the pushback from investors that FinCo consolidation inside PSA is rather unclear. You say that the FinCo are operated under JV, but they continue to appear as fully consolidated in your statements. I'm referring to 2018 statements, page 27. Question is basically, how should we think about your FinCo operations? Are you fully responsible of the FinCo's balance sheet, or are there simple associated companies? That would be my first question.
Okay. Well, on the FinCo's, all the net result is going in the line share net earnings of company at equity, so below the recurring operating income. So, and you've got the detail in the presentation and the attachments of the presentation of the full year. It was page
27, I guess.
It was, the detail was page 49 of the full year presentation.
Okay.
On the slideshow, yeah. And after that, what remains in the group recurring operating income is something extremely small that corresponds to the very few activities of Bank PSA Finance that are not in joint venture. So it's extremely small activities that are basically, if I remember well, Russia and Brazil, but we are talking about something non-significant.
Okay. So just one clear question, Adam. You fully represent the level of liabilities. You don't understate those doing the level of net debt that you would be responsible for. That's a pushback I sometimes have from investors.
No, it's well, the GVs are consolidated by our partners, and for us, it's just share net earnings of company at equity. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's very clear. I've got a second one, if I may. I've been a bit surprised by your comment on the PHEV on your target for 2020. You said that it probably would be easier to price your PHEVs because they are not that much price sensitive. But I have the impression that the share of PHEVs in late 18 has dramatically fallen in Europe, with only accounting for 65% of total plug-in sales mix in Europe. And before that, we have a 50-50 share between BEV and PHEV. So my question would be, assuming that a lot of all the car players and a lot of the competition will come with one or more PHEVs, and that the share of PHEVs inside the Western European market are probably declining, would it be as easy as you think to price the necessary additional content into 2019 and more sharply into 2020?
Well, nothing is easy in our industry, but what we see is that on the market, you've got between 17 and 18 an increase of all that is not diesel and on gasoline, so meaning electric, plug-in hybrid and hybrid. The three have increased on the passenger car. So electric has gone from 0.85 to 1.26. Hybrid, a plug-in hybrid has gone from 0.84 to 1.04, and a hybrid, non-plug-in hybrid, but hybrid, from 3 to 3.84. So the world market is increasing. And after that, it's a question of offer. Is basically the offer that are coming in the market in 19 and 20 are significantly different from what the customer have experienced in the past, significantly different in terms of autonomy, in terms of driving conditions, and that's a big difference, because and it's also true for the BEV, because the new generation of BEV is extremely different from what the customers have experienced. For us, to compare 208, an electrical 208, and to the former car that we have, is something. It's another world. I mean, it's totally different. So. And my comment about the price is we're going to sell the PHEV in the upper segments, which tend to be less price sensitive than the B segment, in which we will have the BEV.
Okay. One quick follow-up on that one. Are you not afraid of a lower, I would say, subsidies, lower help from subsidies? Less and less PHEV have been eligible to public schemes in France, in the UK lately?
Okay. So what is important is to have a PHEVs with less than 50 grams, which will be definitely the case of all the PHEVs that PSA launch. But after that, to your point, I think it's a question for the world industry, because I don't believe, once again, that the incentives will be maintained over the years by the governments. All the governments are bankrupt, more or less, so we should not count on incentives on the medium term.
Okay, thank you. That's very clear.
The next question comes from the line of Stephen Reitman from Societe Generale. Please go ahead. You're now unmuted.
Thank you for taking my additional questions. I think it's been identified in the past that one of the key profitability drivers for you has been the success of your the CD segment, the 3008 and the 5008. Could you comment on how you think they are performing in terms of, you know, as they are one year on? And my second question is on the Grand Land, so the sister model, how are you finding the profitability of that is compared to the Peugeot, to its Peugeot sister model? How's that been improving? Thank you.
Okay. Well, for 308 and 508, these cars have been a success that has exceeded all that we thought, and we are surprised every day by how good they resist after month after month. But the profitability of PSA is not depending on one or two cars. All the programs that are on the market today are profitable. When I say all, it's all. And in particular, I include the DS7 program, for which I have some questions. After that, what will help us in the coming months, and it's already started, in fact, in January and February, is the success of the C5 Aircross, which is a Citroën SUV, because you remember that Citroën was lagging behind in terms of number of SUVs and percentage of sales due to SUVs. Another strong pillar of the group in terms of profitability is LCV, and the LCV momentum is good for all the brands, with the launch of the Partner, the Berlingo, and the Combo for Opel, that is doing very well, and we'll have for Opel the midsize van this year. After that, your other question was about the Grand Land. The Grand Land, in terms of cost of goods sold, is exactly similar to the 308, but after that, it's fair to say that the profitability is less for the moment, because we've not reached the same level of pricing power with Opel as with Peugeot. You can see that the average pricing power indicator was giving us -6% for Opel, when Peugeot is at -1.2 in 18 compared to the benchmark, and the benchmark is the same. So, of course, this difference in pricing power impacts unfavorably the profitability of Opel, but our goal is to increase pricing power in Opel to improve the channels to have convergence on the medium term.
And you say the benchmark is the same, so you're benchmarking both against Volkswagen brand, is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, there remain two quick. Okay, so let's take the last two questions because we need to finish on time.
The next question comes from the line of Horst Schneider from HSBC. Please go ahead.
I'll make it quick, and thanks for taking this other question as well. Maybe a comment on seasonality in 2019. I mean, we had in 2018 strong H1, weak H2. You have got a weak comp base in H2 18. So what should we expect in terms of seasonality, number one? And you talk about a stable European market. You expect to keep your market share also flat in Europe this year?
Okay. Thanks for the two questions. Seasonality, normally, both in PC and OV, if you take a 20 years basis, you've got a seasonality that is unfavorable for the second half compared to the first half. Normally, the typical one is 55-45, I would say, or it can be a bit more in the first half. After that, it depends on many factors, out of which you can have the product momentum, but that's the normal pattern. Sorry, I missed, what was the second question again? Sorry?
Market share.
Oh, market share, yeah. Market share, well, you've seen that PC and Hovi Well, that PCD has increased market share last year in Europe by 0.5 points, that OV has lost 0.4 points. But in OV, you can see that in the first half, the loss was quite significant, and in the second half, it was only 0.2. So the second half was better than the first. We are pushing the team in OV to increase market share, but it's not the top priority of the group. For the moment, it remains in OV to improve pricing power, to improve channels, to improve cost. So as a financial guy, I do not bet on OV on an increase on the market share. And on PCD, I think we should have a slight increase in 19. After that, what is really difficult, I was saying, in 19, especially in the second half, is to make a guess about what will happen with bad actors and good actors in terms of CO2 on the market, and that puts a certain level of uncertainty in the second half.
Mm. Okay, that's clear. Thank you.
The final question comes from the line of George Dieng from Oddo BHF. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. I will make it very, very, very quick. I think during the analyst meeting, Mr. Tavares mentioned the much lower break-even point. Could you just refresh us on where you stand in terms of the break-even point at both PCD and OV? Thank you.
On PCD, our break-even point was around 1.2 million cars. 1.3, sorry, million cars. Which is 50% of what it used to be in the past. For OV, well, there is still work to do in OV, because you remember that our the goal that was published in PACE, but we consider that we need to work more on the fixed cost to reduce it currently, because well, there is still significant differences coming on one side from the fixed cost, on the other hand from the margins.
But the target, if I'm not mistaken, the target was 800,000 units. OV is already very profitable, and I think was selling in excess of 1 million units. So that's why I struggled to,
But that was an initial target. Our goal now, we forget these targets. We have not given a new one on OV specifically, because we want to work on a automotive basis, a complete automotive basis. And basically, I would say what is important is to work on the fixed cost, because the break-even point, you can reach it by the margin and by the fixed cost. And we consider that the top priority is to continue to reduce the absolute value of the fixed cost of the total PCD plus OV. And so we've not given a target anymore on OV on the break-even point.
All right. Pretty clear. Thanks very much.
Okay. Well, thanks to all of you. Thanks for all these questions. And, I will be very happy to meet you again in the coming weeks. Thanks. Goodbye.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your handsets.